Hechel Menachem presents A Tale of Two Souls, an ongoing lecture series on the Tanya by Rabbi Yosef Yitzchak Jacobson. This is tape number 50 in the series, entitled The Art of Becoming Nothing, recorded live at Hechel Menachem, Brooklyn, New York, on the 26th of Cheshvan, 5759.
Morning, Perik Yitches. Daf Chav Gimel Amud Beis, page 46. In the beginning of this Perik, the Alter Rebbe began developing the idea that as a result of the fact that our Avos, Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov were, as our Chazal put it, the Merkava, the chariot, that their entire essence and identity was nothing but a conduit and channel for divine energy, they merited to communicate and to draw down for every single one of their children, for all subsequent generations, a unique spiritual consciousness, a nefesh, a soul which originates in the realm of holiness and godliness, as he puts it, in the 10 spheres of the 10 sacred godly projections existing on in one of the four worlds, Atzilus, Ubriya, Yetzira, Asiya. The soul, to be sure, can either be from the highest level of those emanations and projections defined as Chachma of Atzilus, or perhaps sometimes from the lowest level defined as Malchus of Asiya. But nevertheless, since a defining factor in holiness is unity, perhaps the chief characteristic that defines Kedusha versus non-Kedusha is its unity versus non-Kedusha, which is defined by ego and thus by divisiveness and fragmentation. Therefore, in Kedusha, even the lowest level, even the soul, which originates in the realm of Malchus, of Asiya, it's crafted in the sphere of Malchus. Nevertheless, it also contains the energy of Chachma and of Chachma of Atzilus, which is the first and primary projection and emanation from Hashem's reality. In Chachma, there is the revelation of the Eirin Sof Mamish, as he says, the energy of Hashem himself. And that is also the reason that every soul, even a soul which comes from Malchus, consists of all 10 faculties. It doesn't only have the faculty of royalty in it, of regality. It encompasses all of the 10 faculties, beginning from Chachma all the way through Malchus.
That would mean that Echad is even in period. You say that in Asiya. That even the Echad is even...
Does that mean that the Chachma ultimately is connected even to Asiya? Yes.
So even if in the Asiya it is period.
You're asking Asiya is Pirut. This is what he's saying. Since we are dealing with the 10 holy spheres of Asiya,
right. In
other words, the evolution of the 10 godly attributes, which begin in Atzilus, but ultimately also evolve to the world of Asiya, So even a soul which originates in that world and therefore does not have the same godly intensity, spiritual sensitivity and infinite power or insight that the soul of Atzilus has, ultimately, on a deeper level, contains that whole energy of Chachma.
Essentially, he is actually
telling us again, although in a different form, what he has explained in chapter 2 at length, the metaphor of a child and its relationship to its father. You remember the metaphor? Where the father, the parents produce a child. This child is rooted in the essence of the father's personality and psyche. But the child consists of many compartments. The body has many limbs and organs, beginning with a brain, all the way down to the nail of the toe of the foot. So there are various aspects in the child's body, but nevertheless, all of them stem from the procreative substance which is rooted in the essence of the father's consciousness, as he discussed there at length.
Can I ask you another question? If that would be the case, then the echad, then in a certain sense, the echad, there is an echad that's even, I'll say the word, it's buried in the asiyah, but it's even buried deeper in the asiyah, let's say, the pirud, there is pirud. But then there's a consequence of Averis and Chatoyim.
That's Pirut.
That's Pirut.
Yeah.
But even the Echad is even in there. The Echad is even in there. And if that is the case, so then if that would be the case, that the Echad is buried, let's say, in the Pirut, so is there a Chelik of the Torah that can... What? No?
That is totally a different issue. The relationship of godliness to sins and transgressions and evil, it's not for now. It's a separate discussion. It's a valid issue, but it's a separate issue. Separate discussion.
Even though the toe, the foot of the baby is in essence coming from the brain.
What does it?
Yeah, but it doesn't mean, it doesn't mean lavdafka. I'm not saying it's not, but it doesn't mean lavdafka that the toe of the foot of the baby, it has the essential intensity of life as the brain.
That's true, exactly. That is exactly true. That's Alter Rebbe's point in Perek Beis. All the souls originate in Chachmat Atzilus. Just as all the parts of the child's body, from the brain all the way till the toe, originate in that very same tipa, in that very same creative, procreative substance, which ultimately, from the Jewish perspective, originates not just in a certain element of the father's body, but in his mind, in his very psyche and consciousness. A child is not a product of external energy. It's rooted in the essence of his personality. Nevertheless, this very same tipa, as a result of an evolutionary process which exists and takes place within the mother's womb, becomes compartmentalized in a conspicuous way, and ultimately results in a baby which has various compartments that are drastically different. You can't compare the heart to the arm to the leg, the eye to the nose to the brain, and so forth. And you cannot compare the awareness, the consciousness that exists in a nail to the consciousness that exists in the brain. And therefore, where is the relationship of the father to the child, the deep connection felt and experienced in the brain? That is also where we recognize the bond between the child and the father. Because the child's personality projects in a very powerful way his progenitors. So on one level that is true, and the same is true in the spiritual sense, that the neshamas all come from Chachmas Atzilus. All the neshamas, just like all parts of the baby's body come from the Chachma of the father, they all come from the same tip. As a result of the process of evolution, however, various neshamas are affected in different ways. So there's a neshama which is defined as the leg of Klal Yisrael. There's the neshama which is defined as the arm of Klal Yisrael. The neshama which are defined as the eye of Klal Yisrael, as the ear, as the nose. Each one with a unique capacity, a unique mission, a unique challenge, unique opportunities. There is a special mission that every soul has that it was charged with, that no one else can fill for it. Just like the body has various components, and if the stomach decides one day that I do not like my position as a stomach, I would like to become an arm. Beautiful, but your power is in the fact that you're a stomach. And if you cease to be that, it's not only going to affect you, it will affect the entire body, the entire organism of the human structure. So the same is true concerning the neshamas. And you cannot compare a neshama which is Chachma d'Atzilus and remained in Chachma d'Atzilus to a neshama of Malchus d'Asiya. On the other hand, Alter Rebbe explains, that neshama of Malchus d'Asiya ultimately has, in a powerful, intrinsic, essential way, the very same connection with the Father. Because the leg ultimately is connected to its source just as much as the brain is connected to its source. And the reason for that is because ultimately the brain is the essence of the leg. You're dealing with one organism. The brain is the central nervous system which serves as the essence of all of the faculties and compartments and elements of the child structure. So even the lowest part of that structure is identically connected with its source, in its essence, as the highest part of that structure. So at the root of Malchus of Asiya, of that Nefesh, there is also the energy of Chachma Vatzilus. Let's continue inside. V'nimtza. It's Perikut Ches. Daf Chav Gimel Amid Beis, the line beginning with the words Yasad Eretz V'kulam B'chachma Asisa. Five lines from the bottom of the page. V'nimtza. V'nimtza. As a result of what has been explained, we understand ki ein seiv baruchu melubash bebchinas chachma shebenefesh ha'adam yiyem ishiyem yisro, that the light of the blessed ein sof is garbed in the faculty of chachma, of wisdom, in the human soul of whatever sort of Jew he may be. Yiyem ishiyi, no matter which Jew, no matter who the Jew is, there is absolutely no difference in this sense, that since by virtue of him being Jewish, he has a nefesh gdeisha, and that nefesh gdeisha consists of all the 10 faculties, including chachma, and in that faculty of chachma, Hashem's reality dwells and is garbed and is enclosed in the chachma. Obchin es hachachma shabba. And in turn, the soul's faculty of wisdom, im eid ein seif baruchu amalu b'shba, together with the light of the ein sof which is garbed in it, mispashet es b'chol b'chinas ha-nefesh kula, suffuses all the levels of the soul in its entirety, mib'chinas reishat b'chinas ragla, from head to foot, as it were, meaning from the highest level of the soul to the lowest level of the soul. And he explains, to animate them with the vitality, with the energy that Chachma experiences. So the energy and the experience that Chachma possesses, is not only relegated to that realm of the soul, but rather, this energy is communicated and is extended to all the other elements of the soul, from the highest levels to the lower levels, that they are all animated with this type of perception and energy. Kedeksiv, as the Pasuk says, in Kehelas, Perek Zayin, HaChachma techaya ba'ala, wisdom gives life to those who possess it. So in spirituality, the Alter Rebbe sees this Pasuk as denoting that the soul which possesses the faculty of wisdom receives its life by means of the chachma, by means of this faculty. So since every single Jew has the faculty of chachma, because even a Jew who is born to a parent which might be spiritually lowly and absolutely insensitive to godliness, these parents, by virtue of them being Jewish and ultimately being descendants of Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, extend to him a holy consciousness. So even the nefesh, so this Jew, even having the lowest type of nefesh, this nefesh ultimately has in it the faculty of chachma and is connected, is a projection of the faculty of chachma of Atzilus, which is the primary, the wisdom of Hashem, that is the projection of Hashem in its deepest way. So therefore in this soul, in the faculty of chachma, is shayda eidin sof baruch hu. There is the revelation and the indwelling of Hashem's reality. Ulepa'amim, at times, mamshichim peishi Yisrael, neshamas gvayis ma'ayid shahayu bimki aklipas. The sinners of Israel, so to speak, may even bring down for their children very lofty and high souls which had been in the depths of the klipas. K'may shekasov b'sefer gugula, as is explained in Sefer Gugula. Generally speaking, the Alter Rebbe stated before, although a kal shebekalim and a pishei Yisrael, the light-headed type of Jew, or the kal shebekalim is the light-headed among the light-headed themselves, which means the most type of light-headed Jew and a pishei Yisrael. So generally speaking, they will draw down for their children a lowly type of soul, a lower level in souls. It's taka a sacred soul, but it comes from Malchus of Asiyah. Now, the Rebbe says sometimes there's an exception, that precisely because the parents might be Peshi Yisrael, might be absolutely insensitive to the whole spiritual dynamic, it is precisely because of that reason that at times they can draw down for their children the highest spiritual energies and souls. As is explained in Sefer Gagulim, Sefer Gagulim is the book on transmigration, written by Reb Chaim Vital, where he articulates and expounds on the teachings of his Rebbe, the Arizal, Rabbi Yitzchak Luria, the master Kabbalist, 16th century Mekubal of Tzvatz, concerning the idea of Gilgulim, of reincarnation, of transmigration. So there's a whole Sefer called Sefer al-Gilgulim. The Arizal's perspectives on Gilgulim, which is one of the primary themes in his Kabbalah, is primarily articulated in this Sefer HaGilgulim, written by Reb Chaim Vital, which is a complete Sefer that deals with it. In addition to that, there's also Shar HaGilgulim. There are Shmoyne Sharim, there are eight portals in which Reb Chaim Vital compressed Arizal's teachings, primarily in eight portals. Shar HaKavonais, Shar HaPsukim, one of them is Shar HaGilgulim. In Sefer HaGilgulim, the Arizal still develops this theme that sometimes a soul which exists in the realm of klipos are the negative shells that conceal the energy of godliness and spirituality, these klipos do not want to release the soul, because since it's a soul which has powerful spiritual intensity, the klipos know that if this soul is born and is productive, so that means that they can be destroyed as a result of him. And the klipos are always attempting to exist, like every creature wants to exist, wants to preserve itself. And their existence comes from the weakness of the elements of kedusha, of holiness. But ultimately, the souls have to be born. So what do the klipos do? When the klipos see a couple which is totally unholy, and therefore knows that their union and the relationship will be stripped of spiritual sensitivity and energy, and the upbringing and education that this child will have will also be quite a destructive and negative one, they say, oh, here is a good opportunity to send the soul into the world. And as a result of sending the soul into the world, not only will we not be defeated, but on the contrary, our energy will be infinitely enhanced, because if this soul becomes corrupted and abusive, the energy that we will receive from this soul will be so much deeper. You see, the klipos are parasitic creatures. They're parasites. Why? Because they do not have energy, independent energy. Why? Because all energy comes from one source, from Hashem. And they are the antithesis of Hashem's reality. So they do have a little obscured, minute energy that Hashem transmits to them, thus that they should be able to exist. But their primary source of energy is when holiness is abused, distorted, and corrupted. When a human being, for example, utters a lie. When a human being utters a lie, Klipa celebrates. Why? Because a human being took a soul which is truthful, which is spiritual, which is holy, which is egoless, and distorted it, and abused it. The soul, which is essentially connected to Hashem, that very same soul in the perception of man now perpetuates the illusion that the klipa is embodied and personified. When a person says a lie, he perpetuates the delusion that they live for. So he transmits his energy to them. The deeper the energy of holiness, the deeper the possibility for klipa to get energy, because if that's distorted, they get so much more energy because there is so much spiritual intensity there. So that if it's a very powerful soul, they want to release it into such a type of relationship, and they feel that ultimately they will be nourished so much more deeply.
You mean the chayas of the soul needs to be distorted in order for the klipas to take
it? If the chayas of the soul remains loyal to Kedusha, the klipas don't get anything out of it. It's too truthful for them, and it's antithetical to them.
I see. So the soul needs to distort a little bit of its kedusha in
order to
be taken in by the klipas.
Uh-huh. That's why we know that wherever there's a greater potential for kedusha, there's always a greater potential for tumma. Why? Because that is where they find themselves. They hover around those elements to get the pesa a part of it. A juicy piece of cake. Why should they go to
That's
the nourishment, yeah. If you can have a good geschmack at dinner, what do you have to go to a poor, untasteful dinner? Huh? Conversely, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Every time the Jew clings to holiness, he is actually demonstrating that the klipa perception is an illusion. Let's continue. Hinei ha-chachma, chavdala namadala, the two dots, third line. Now the Alter Rebbe will return to the original point, that every Jew has a soul which stems from the Holy Spheres. And that ultimately each soul is animated by the light of Ein Sof as a result of the soul's faculty of Chachma. So now the Alter Rebbe will go on to explain why it's Chachma that is the original recipient of the light of Ein Sof. Hine, ha-Chachma hi makir ha-seichel va-havana. Now Chachma is the source of intelligence and comprehension. It is higher than Bina, Shohu Havanas HaSeichel VaHasagasa, which is the faculty of understanding an idea and grasping it. VaChachma, Hilamayla MeHavana VaHasaga. Chachma, on the other hand, is above comprehension and understanding, VaMakir Lahen, and she is a source for the intelligence, for the Havana and Asaga, for the intelligence and comprehension. This is indeed the meaning of the word Chachma. Kayachma, the etymology composition, the etymological composition of the word Chachma is Kayachma. Chaf ches is kayach and mem hei. What do these two words mean? Kayach ma is the faculty of what? Or in other words, the faculty of the unknown. Shehu ma she'eini musugu muvan. This is a faculty which cannot be comprehended and grasped. Ve'eini nitvas b'hasaga adayin. It's not yet grasped via the medium of intellect. That is what Chachma is. Is this called intuition? One moment. V'lachein mislabish ba'ed Ein Sof Baruch Hu. For this reason, the light of the Ein Sof, the light of Hashem, is vested in her in Chachma, the leis machshavet fisibikla. Because no thought can comprehend him at all. No thought whatsoever can be Typhusim. And therefore, the Ein Sof, the endless one, is vested and enclosed solely in the faculty of Chachma. Here, the Alter Rebbe gives us briefly the definition of the first faculty and power that the soul, every soul, consists of, called Chachma, which he indeed already has made mention of and has explained also briefly in chapter 3. We then discussed what Chachma is at length. And here again, the Alter Rebbe gives us a brief definition for it. Chachma is essentially the first flash of intellect. It is the seminal and inner point of an idea. The seminal point of the idea already includes within itself all of the details and ramifications of the idea. But nevertheless, as they are still in that realm, in that seminal point, they are still contracted, concentrated, and obscured, much more concealed. Chachma indeed is also defined as the intuitive flash of illumination, which is the beginning of intellectual revelation. It is only following that where the second stage of intellectual experience occurs, that is called Bina. Chachma is conception, Bina is comprehension. Bina is taking the seminal idea of Chachma, articulating it, developing it, compartmentalizing it, and creating a full, complete, structured idea. The example that's given through the Alter Rebbe and other Hasidic discourses, which he elaborates this point more, is a famous example, actually, which we observe in our own experience quite often. If you are studying something, and you study it, and you don't understand what it says, you simply do not comprehend it. Not because you don't understand the language or the vocabulary. You do. But the concept is alien to you. So what do? If one is lazy, you close the book and you forget about it. But if you're a serious student, you study it again and you still do not understand a single word. You don't know what this is saying. Whether you're studying a piece of Gemara, a Rashi, a Tesis, a Rishon, a Achron, or Havdal, another discipline. You simply do not understand what the Sefer, what the book is saying, what this page is teaching us. So what do? You study it a third time and you still don't understand it. You decide, you are determined to understand it, so you study it again, and then suddenly, there is a flash. Suddenly there is a thought that enters your mind and you have this intuition, this feeling that your question has been answered, that you have grasped the idea, that you got it. You feel that you could ultimately explain your dilemma through a particular line of reasoning. At that moment of illumination, the person is not aware yet how the particular question is answered. He knows only that he has found an adequate solution for his problem and dilemma. If you come over to the person at that moment, when he felt that clarity, and you say, "No, explain it to me," he cannot. He can't even explain it to himself. But he feels that he has it, that he grasped it. I gave one example. This can happen in many areas. It can happen when you're reading a sefer. It can happen you have this dilemma in your mind and several days pass and you're walking in the street or you're sitting on your couch or you're eating dinner and suddenly, I have it. Then comes stage two. Stage two is Bina, understanding. Bina comes into play only after Chachma. Bina apprehends, crystallizes, clarifies all of the details of the idea which have been obscured in Chachma. Bina takes that flash and develops it and creates a complete structure of an intellectual concept. Then one has a whole idea, a whole edifice in all its length, in all its breadth, in all its depth. The entire idea with all its details become manifest, and then the human being has an articulated concept which he can transcribe on paper, which he can discuss, which he can explain to his fellow man and so forth. So Chassidus asks the question, what is the explanation of this process? If in the stage of Chachma you did not really have an answer, why did you feel you had an answer? What is the source for this nebulous intellectual state, which always occurs? You have it, but you don't have it. You grasped it, but you did not grasp it. You cannot articulate, you cannot explain it, you do not know what the answer is. Understanding something means a relationship with something. There's a relationship between your mind and the concept. And in every relationship of two parties, we discussed this at chapter 3 in great detail. I'll just reiterate it briefly to understand this parak. In every relationship of two parties, the obvious question arises, comes to mind, which party is the more dominant one in the relationship and which one is the more subservient. This is especially seen in relationships between people. When two people bond a relationship, one of three things can happen. Either one party is the dominant element in the relationship, totally dominating and exercising its full authority and its personality features on the other party. So where's their relationship? That the other party has agreed by its own volition or by coercement or whatever to abnegate itself, to nullify its own identity to the other party. Or it could be conversely.